Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and are always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Steve Cavanaugh. Steve is a published author of multiple books in the thriller genre. In this episode, Steve talks about his book, 13, his writing process, and of course, a round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the show.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks very much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer from Northern Ireland. I write thrillers. I used to be a lawyer until very recently. I've ever since given up the law to write full time. And my latest book is 13, which has just come out in the United States on the 13th of August. So I'm here on tour at the moment.
I love it. And I read 13 and I enjoy it. So,
thank you.
Yeah, so you're a lawyer, and so it would be remiss to say that, you know, 13 and some of the other books, you deal with a lawyer as a main character. So how much of your experience did you bring into your writing?
I think I brought a fair amount to my writing. The character that I write about, Eddie Flynn, used to be a con artist before he was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of explore the fact there's not a great deal of difference between the two professions.
Mm-hmm.
And a trial lawyer and a con artist have, you know, largely all the same skills, you know, distraction, manipulation, persuasion. So I thought I could, you know, lift a lid and show readers a world maybe they're not too familiar with and let them see how this really works, as opposed to what you might see in a TV show or things like that.
And so what inspired you to become a writer?
What inspired me to become a writer? Reading? I think all writers are readers first. Certainly all good writers are readers first. So I always read, you know, from a young age. I read comic books, and then I started reading novels. And my mom gave me my first crime novel when I was about 12 years old, Silence of the Lambs, which I loved. And that really turned me on to crime, especially American crime fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading it for years, and I thought I never think I could write a book. Around 18 or when I was 18 or 19,
mm-hmm.
I thought I could maybe try and write a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a couple of screenplays, managed to get an agent, but I didn't get anything sold. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a very tough way to make a living. So I had my law degree to fall back on. So
mm-hmm.
I then became a lawyer, forgot all about becoming a writer. And that was until about 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when my mom passed away quite suddenly.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And yeah, no, it's okay. So she was the only person who ever encouraged me to write. So I thought, mm-hmm. I'm going to give this another go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and write a book that she would like. So that's mm-hmm. how I came to write my first novel.
I love it. So what was your journey like to get your first novel published?
Difficult. Difficult. I wrote the book and I kept working on it and rewriting.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go the route of getting a literary agent and getting a traditional deal. That was just mm-hmm. my choice. And I got lots and lots of rejections, probably 50 or 60 rejections.
Oh, wow.
I was, maybe even more, I was only trying small literary agencies
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. and in the United Kingdom. And occasionally I would get an encouraging email saying, okay, send us the whole book. We've read the first three chapters, send us the whole book. And then you would hear nothing, and then you'd get an email, you know, to say no thanks, but no thanks. So there was a small literary agency in Ireland, and I tried them, and they said, oh, quite like, love the first three chapters, send us the rest of the book. And I did that, and I thought, you know, I've been in this situation before where I've thought, well, maybe I'm close to landing an agent. Mm-hmm. I'll just send it out to a few of the bigger agencies in the United Kingdom, just see what happens. So I sent it out. And then I remember it was a Monday night. I got the email from the small agency in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And they said, you can write. There's no doubt about that. But this book will never be published. You're just kidding yourself thinking this book will be published. So scrap this book and write another one. And I was, you know, that hit me pretty hard because I'd put a lot into the first book. And I thought, oh, no, it's awful. And that was a Monday. I sort of thought, I'm finished. You know, I couldn't write another book. I thought, you know, if I can't get this one, someone that could be interested in this book, I don't think I have a chance with another one. Mm-hmm. So that was on the Monday night. On the Wednesday, I got offers from the two top UK agencies straight away. So they loved it. And I went with an agency called A.M. Heath in London. They're one of the oldest literary agencies in London. They represented George Orwell. They represent Hilary Mantel and lots of really good writers. And they're a slightly smaller agency, sort of mid-sized. They're not one of these massive agencies with 500 agents. They're quite small. Mm-hmm. So you get a really good personal service. You feel like you have a really good personal relationship with them. But they also have the clout where every publisher in the world, you know, when they send in a manuscript, it's read and taken seriously. So I'm very lucky. It was tough. I think it's supposed to be tough, you know. I don't think it's easy for anyone. The only person I know of who ever got a literary agent to take notice of his book with his first submission was Lee Child. But then Lee Child is a genius. Yeah. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think in the story, your story is fairly common, just the amount of reductions and, you know, the process that you kind of have to be resilient about it.
Yeah, you do. It's easy to get dejected about it, you know.
Yeah.
And you often think to yourself, God, am I just kidding myself here? Is this really terrible? And I'm just deluded.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to be a little bit deluded when you're starting off. You know, I think that's a good thing in a way.
Yeah.
But you to suddenly decide that you think you can write a novel is a bit of a crazy, deluded thing to do in the first place. It's like saying I'm going to be an astronaut.
Mm.
You know, it's a bit crazy. So I think, whilst I encourage everyone to write, you do have to have a lot of, you know, self-belief at the start and just to keep going and not to quit. I think that is the key.
I love it. So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
No, I don't have anything. I have a very rough idea.
Okay.
So in the case of 13, I thought, okay, well, what would happen if there was a serial killer on a jury?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my outline.
Mm.
So I will then just think, well, who is this person? Why is he one on the jury? And I knew it was going to be an Eddie Flynn book. This is a book in the Eddie Flynn series.
Mm-hmm.
So Eddie would need to be involved in a case. So I just started writing. That's what I do. So I started off with sort of preparation that Joshua Kane would have to go through to try and get onto a jury. What would be the first steps?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't outline anything. I have no plan. I just make it all up as I go along.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So, because I can imagine some of the twists and turns from later on the chapters, you may just discover as you were writing them, as opposed to, you know, having them lined up.
Yeah, yeah. I tend to do that. You know, as I'm writing, something will ring a bell with me. Something I've written, I think, okay, that could be something else, or it will start off a plot thread, which I wasn't anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just have to think, okay, well, I'll remember this. So I make notes as I go along,
mm-hmm.
so I can remember who the characters are. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, someone doesn't have green eyes in one page and brown eyes in another page, and everyone has the same name. And I remember trying to keep the book in my head as I'm writing it. And then I stop every 20,000 words and I go back to the beginning and I read over what I've done and I make little grammatical changes and I'll do a few edits, but nothing major. It's just sort of polishing it. But then I reminded myself of everything I've written and I know then, okay, well, I've got 20,000 words here. What can I do with them? Are there any things here I could use later on as a twist or something like that? So it makes it fun. I'm kind of telling my story. I'm kind of telling myself the story as I'm writing it.
Mm-hmm. And so you've written 4 books for Edifin. How do you keep track of the story arc? Keeping, I know you mentioned you keep notes for it, but I think sometimes you have other books that may lead some clues or some Easter eggs for the next books.
Yeah, sometimes there are a few Easter eggs or a few recurring characters. I'm just trying to keep me mindful of who the characters are that I've written before, you know. I wanted the series to work that you could read it in any order. Mm-hmm. So a reader can pick up book 4 in the series and have just the same experience as someone who picked up, who started from book 1.
Okay.
I thought that was very important. So there is not really a huge arc to Eddie. We follow him in his personal life and he has ups and downs. Mm-hmm. But there's no massive overall arc which you have to follow, really.
Okay.
You can dip in and out of each book that works completely as a standalone.
Okay.
I suppose if you've read the other books, you maybe have a greater familiarity with the character.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't lose anything as a reader by jumping straight in.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't lose anything as a reader. I think he was an interesting character, like, and I saw his backstory about his family and the Dutch and the whole backstory around it. So I got a sense of who he was as a character and what he was bringing to the table, even though I haven't read the first 3 books in the series.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you did that. Yeah, that's the tricky thing, is trying to keep it interesting for a new reader and not bore the other readers who know the character very well.
Yeah.
So that's one of the little tricky parts in every book.
So what inspired to write Eddie as a character, since you actually have invested quite some time with this character?
Yeah, for me, he comes very easily. His voice is sort of in my head, and I can write him quite easily. He just tends to flow. I have changed points of view in this book and in later books. So that's more of a challenge, I think, right, for characters. And it's just a case of keeping Eddie true to himself, really, and keeping his voice true. And that comes pretty naturally to me, because I think I have a good understanding of who he is now. But of course, the other challenge is, well, for each book, you know, Eddie has to have something personal at stake, and there have to be changes for him as a character within each individual book. So I would like to think that he grows, or he gets hurt or challenged, or there is an individual arc for him for each book, and that can be interesting, and that keeps the character fresh for me as well when I'm writing it.
So this story is a bit of a cat and mouse game, where we meet Kane as a serial killer who wants to get on the jury because that's part of his journey. And then Eddie, who's the defense lawyer, who's trying to get the client out of the crime, who's like, you know, I have an innocent client, and just wants to get him not guilty, verdict.
Yeah.
Why did you choose the dual point of view? Why do we get the serial killer? Because typically for some of those thrillers, we don't care for the serial killer until the latest, you know, twist, and we're like, oh, he's in the jury. But in this case, we knew he was in the jury. So why choosing to include a dual point of view as opposed to just a single point of view?
Okay, well, I in the previous books, it was just a single point of view, largely, with Eddie.
Yeah.
I think the villain characters weren't maybe just as well developed because of that. Because you only see those characters through Eddie's eyes. And it makes it difficult to hide a villain. You can only see what they're doing or what they're up to when the main character is looking at them or dealing with them. So I thought if I allowed myself to have another point of view, we would get a much richer look at the villain of the piece. And it also it was a challenge for me because I wanted to write this character, Joshua Kane, and also at the same time, you know he's on the jury, but you don't know which one he is on the jury, which is the other challenge for it. So whilst you're there and you know what's going on, you're not entirely sure who he is. Mm-hmm. And that I thought that was an exciting challenge. But I think it made him more real.
Yeah, I think that was an exciting challenge, and not knowing who was on jury. Like, you thought you were one person, and then you realize it's like a completely different story that's coming up. I think that was like an interesting take on for the serial killer, just to be in the jury. And the whole purpose why he wanted to be in the jury was actually an interesting twist and turn. But yeah, he was an interesting character to read. Like, I loved his chapters because they were just so intricate about the whole murder, the whole glory, the whole trying to get into jury, like the whole process. That just made it more interesting as a book.
Thank you. Yeah, he was a lot of fun to write because, you know, I think if you have a really good villain, they think they're the hero of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have their own challenges and setbacks to deal with. Mm-hmm. So I think that made him much more rounded. And actually, some readers have told me they were reluctantly rooting for Joshua Kane at certain points in the book because they wanted him to get on the jury, even though he was a very bad character, a very bad guy. They wanted him on that jury to see what he would do, almost. So that was good. I'm really glad that readers could. At least, because he is, whilst he does do horrible things and he is highly manipulative, I think some readers really enjoy a good villain. You know, they sort of think, oh, he's deliciously evil. So it's a lot of fun to write a character like that.
Yeah, it seemed to be, as a reader, it was an enjoyable experience for me. As someone who enjoys, he's got tired about hearing the same twist and turn. Like, this one had enough interesting twists that I just thought it was like, oh, I did not know. I thought what I thought I knew did not show up. And then another twist. And it just kept me going. For me, I read this book in two settings.
Wow.
Yeah, which is for a thriller, that's not typical. I usually take my time. And so this book, I just couldn't put it down. Like, that's the feeling. Because I was rooting for Joshua Kane to get on the jury. I was rooting to see if they will figure out that he's the killer. And I wanted to know why he was killing all these people. And then the twist of who Joshua Kane was, that was like a big twist that I just appreciate.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted.
There you go. So what can we expect about your next release? Is it another Edith Fling book or is it a different book?
Well, there's going to be two books published in the U.S. next year, so I can tell you about both of them.
Oh, yeah.
First up in February is my standalone novel. I'd written four Eddie Flynn thrillers, and I thought, I wonder, could I write a book that's not set in a courtroom? Again, I think if I'm writing a book, I want it to be the best book I can be, but I also want to try and challenge myself with each book.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about other books that I really enjoy, and I'm sure you're the same. You know, the seem to be the books of the moment are the high-concept psychological thrillers like
mm-hmm.
Gone Girl and Girl on the Train and, you know, books like that, The Silent Patient,
mm-hmm.
Before I Go to Sleep. So... And there, all those books are billed as a gripping psychological thriller with a twist you won't see coming. And a lot of them hang their hat on this twist. And I love twists, as you can tell by reading 13. There's a couple of twists in that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write a novel about twists.
Mm-hmm.
So the book that's coming out in February is called Twisted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about... one of the world's greatest mystery writers, a guy called J.T. LeBeau. who sold 75 million copies of his novels all over the world. He's the master of the twist, and no one knows who he is. No one's met him. No one knows what he looks like. They know it's a man, and that's it. And the mystery of J.T. LeBeau's real identity helps fuel the popularity of the books. That's the background of it. And the story is about a lady called Maria Cooper, who's in a fairly new marriage to her husband, Paul, and things have not gone well. She thinks she's rushed into it. And she's quite lonely and isolated because her husband works away quite a lot. And she's having an affair. And she opens her husband's desk drawer one morning and finds a bank statement in it in the name of J.T. LeBeau with $20 million in it. So she thinks that her husband is J.T. LeBeau and he's been keeping all this money from her and from her, and that's how the story begins. And the other interesting thing about the book is it'll have my name on the cover. It'll say Steve Kavanagh, Twisted. Mm-hmm. And when you open the book up, there will be a fake title page. Mm. It'll say Twisted by J.T. LeBeau. And then there's a note from the author, J.T. LeBeau, to say, this will be my last book. You will know why when you finish this story. Just bear in mind two things. One, this book has not been edited. It's just you and me. And number two, don't believe a single word you read. So it's a book, the novel is written as if you're reading a J.T. LeBeau novel. So it's a story about an unreliable narrator written by an unreliable narrator.
I love it.
Oh, thank you very much. So that was a lot of fun to write. That was a ton of fun to write. And I love the readers' reactions to it. I get various messages on Instagram and Twitter from readers going, oh my God, I'm on page such and such and you just did this. I can't believe it. I never get to sleep. And it's really good fun, that book.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to read it. I may request an ARC for it.
Oh, cool. So. Yeah, well, we're going to have ARC soon. Flatiron Books will have ARC soon of that. And then in probably August of next year, there will be the follow-up to 13, which is called 50-50. That's an Eddie Flynn book. And 50-50 starts off with a transcript of a 911 emergency call from a lady called Alexandra Avellino, who calls police and says, oh my God, I've just found my father in his bedroom. He's been murdered. He's been stabbed. My sister has done it. I think she's still in the house and she still has a knife. I've locked myself in the bathroom. Get here quick, please, please. And then there's another 911 call from Sophia Avellino, who says, I've just found my father in his bedroom. He's been murdered. My sister, Alexandra, has killed him. I'm running out of the house now. Get here quick. So both women are blaming, both sisters are blaming each other for their father's murder. They are both arrested and both of them are put on trial together for the murder. And Eddie's representing one sister, and there's a new female lawyer called Kate Brooks who's representing the other sister. And the points of view in that book are Eddie and Kate, and a third point of view, which is simply known as She. And it's one of the sisters who has planned the murder and planned to be put on trial with her sister and has planned this whole thing from the beginning, and but you don't know which sister it is.
Gosh, I can't wait. You're just leaving us with the great teasers about books you really get to look forward to reading.
Well, thank you very much. They're a lot of fun to write. And that's my main thing when I sit down to write a book is I really think a lot about the reader, and I really want the reader to have a good time and keep turning the pages. And that's and if then people do that, then that's brilliant. That's just such a great buzz for me.
Yes, it is. It was a really great experience to read 13. I came in with low expectations because I've been burned down by thrillers. So I was pleasantly surprised that I kept wanting to read it. And it was like midnight and I was like, I need to go to bed. So I finished it off that next morning. I woke up like 8 a.m. and I finished it off at 10 a.m. It was like such a pleasant experience just to know like wanting to know what's next. And it was great.
Oh. thank you. That's brilliant to hear.
So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
My favorite genre? Well, it has to be crime and thrillers is my favorite genre, I have to say. Although I do read in other genres. I like literary fiction. I like science fiction and fantasy. So I do read. I like to dip into different genres. But crime and thrillers is my main genre. I've just finished two really good books there while I've been on tour. So the first one was The Whisper Network by Chandler Baker, which I hugely enjoyed. And it's a book really of the moment. It's a lot about the Me Too movement. And these female lawyers who work in Dallas, and there's someone in the high-up in the company who has died, and there's a bit of a murder mystery element to it, but it sort of goes through their lives and what these women face trying to balance being a mother and a wife and a lawyer as well. And just a really, really good novel, a real very, very timely read. So I would encourage everyone to go and get that one. The other one I've just finished is an arc for a book that's out in the UK later this year. I don't know when it's out in the USA, but it's by H.A. Linsky, Howard Linsky, called Alice Teal is Missing. And it's about a young schoolgirl who goes missing in a small rural English village. And she's missing for about 48 hours. The police are called in. They're interviewing people. And then they start to get pages from her diary sent to their inquiry office. And this is Alice Teal's journal. And the book just takes off from there. It was a really, really fun read. So, yeah. So there's two recommendations. I can give you one more, if you like. This is a writer. There's a lot of mystery writers, and we're all friends, and we all sort of promote each other. There's one writer we all read, and we are all in sort of in total admiration of, and that's a UK writer called Mick Herron. And Mick writes spy novels. Now, I wouldn't read too many spy books. I read Ian Fleming stuff when I was younger. I've read Jean Le Carré. I've read a few other spy books. But Mick's novels are on the next level. They're just amazing. So they all center on a group of MI5 agents and Secret Service agents who have all messed up in some way. They've made some terrible mistake or done something wrong in the service, but they can't just be fired because they know all of these state secrets. So they're put in an old dilapidated building called Slough House in London. And it's a story about these spies. The first novel's called Slow Horses. And it's just phenomenal. The books are, they go like a rocket train. They're really fast, really well written, beautiful prose, really funny and interesting. So, and they've won, I don't know how many prizes those books have won. So, the Slough House series by Mick Herron, I'd recommend to any reader of any age. They're fantastic.
I love it. Tell us where you can find you online.
I have a website which is updated sporadically, stevecavanaughauthor.com. The best place to find me online is at Twitter, at SSCav, S-S-C-A-V. Or there's a Facebook page, Steve Kavanagh, C-A-V-A-N-A-G-H. And I'm Instagram as well, S-S-Cav.
Thank you so much, Steve, for being on the show.
Not at all. It's been a great pleasure, Laura. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come on.
Thank you, Steve, for a great interview. For show notes and a list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with an author interview.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. please visit whatyournextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.